Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Beer Ladies podcast with your hosts, Lisa, Katie, Christina, and myself, Tandy. You can find us at our website or all over social media. Our website is beerladiespodcast.com, and our social media, Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, Blue Sky, TikTok, and even Facebook are at Beer Ladies Pod or Beer Ladies Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, you can find our merch store link on any of our social media bios or in the show notes for this episode. And if you'd like to sponsor an episode, do mail us at beerladiespodcast@gmail.com. Now back to the beer. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast, and happy 2024.
Happy New Year. Yay.
I can't believe Christmas was over already. And actually, it's already the middle of January. It's past the middle of January. And like, you know, we say it all the time, and I'm sure you've had these conversations around the water cooler, but where the hell does the time go? Yeah, we had great plans to come back to recording much earlier in January, but you know what? We're all busy. So it is what it is. But anyway, here we are. Today we have myself, Tandy, and I've got a midge or something flying around me, which is annoying me. But we also have Lisa and Katie.
Hello.
Righto. And today we are talking about bitters. I mean, bitters, what is a bitter? What, you know, is it a style of beer? Is it only found in the UK? Like, what's going on with the bitter? And so we'll go through a little bit of, you know, history and where it came from. We'll talk a little bit about what to look for in a bitter. I mean, maybe a little bit of how to brew one, but I'm not promising anything. I've done not enough research today. But we'll, you know what, we also want to talk about the perception of bitters and other UK styles in Ireland, because it is a unique place, you know, for beer. And so we'll talk a bit about that. But yes, let's get going with what are you drinking? Katie, I'm going to start with you because I know that, you know.
I'm on the water tonight, completely on the water, because I was not organized enough. And I actually don't have anything in the fridge. I don't know what's going on with me. Ah, crazy.
It does happen, so, especially after the holidays, you know.
There we go. I'm going to have to do an order somewhere.
You could just have blamed Dry January and we would have all believed you.
I'd have said that, but I'm not doing Dry January.
No, Dry January all the way.
That would have been a lie.
Well, fine.
Yes, we are always truthful here. So,
indeed.
I'm just of my own art. But I will take this quick minute to display my t-shirt, which says Good Tubbin, which will take me on a little bit of a tangent after we've done the what are you drinking with other people.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. Lisa, what you got?
So I had a bitter. I thought I had a bitter in my fridge, but it turned out that passed me, and I went back into my untapped to check, passed me over the holidays, drank all the bitter in the fridge. And again, because there weren't very many of them, so it sounds like a really heroic effort to say I drank all the bitter. There were like two, but so instead I have Ballykilcavan's Brickyard Red Ale, and as we get into it we'll talk a bit about why this is all still very much appropriate for talking about bitter. And I know Tandy, you and I will talk about how we've been back and forth to the UK recently and maybe some bitters we've had there of late, so much to discuss. But
indeed,
over to you. Yes.
Yep, well, I'm on the same train. of the red ale and not a bitter. I've got 8 Degrees Brewing and it's sunburnt Irish red ale. And they say here caramel, malt and bitter orange, which is a very nice descriptor for a red ale. So when I was looking for a bitter, so listeners, to let you in behind the curtain a little bit, we had an episode planned for tonight and then we had to quickly change the topic because we weren't all prepared or available to do what we'd planned. So this is why we're a bit, a bit all last over the minute. Place. But it's okay.
We
know some stuff.
We make it happen.
We do. But I was a little disappointed because I went into, you know, like my local O'Brien's, Tesco, all the rest, my little strip mall where I have everything. And to be honest, I didn't look in Tesco. I could have probably found something there, but in the O'Brien's, there was not a bitter to be found, nothing. And I couldn't find either like an English pale ale or something like a little bit adjacent. So it was a red ale for me. And the only thing I want to say is that I almost wish that we could find those Lochgill ESBs around because, those were good.
Yes, those really were wonderful. Those. Yeah. So I don't know if they're just not ramping back up after the holidays, but yeah, Lochgill folks, we love that ESB. So more of it, please. It is delicious. So
it was divine. And it was just nice to find something interesting and different, and especially like in Aldi. So I didn't go to Aldi today, but that's where we found the ones the last time. So it was, yeah, really, really cool.
Yeah. And I noticed you've both gone for red ale.
We have. Yes. For reasons, maybe?
For reasons. What are the reasons? Why is a red ale a bitter? Is a bitter like a red ale? What are we talking about here?
Are we controversial? Maybe. Maybe.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. So I can tell you that from a home brewing perspective, if you're brewing, you sometimes brew to a style or sometimes you just brew with ingredients on hand, right? And sometimes your beers will end up looking redder than what you thought or looking darker than what you thought or lighter than what you thought because the way that the malts play when you're brewing is not always predictable, especially with a new recipe. So, you know, when we talk about a bitter as a beer style, and there is a BJCP style for bitters, there are three under an ordinary bitter, a best bitter, and a strong bitter. But these are beers that grew out of British pale ales. And why we posit that red ales and pale ales, you know, are really very adjacent to bitters is that they were obviously supposed to be slightly more bitter. You know, they've got to have prominent bitterness. That's the, you know, the real defining factor of the style. But as for the kind of the look and the mouthfeel and the drinkability, it's very similar to red ales. And sometimes they're conflated because red ales can have a little bit more of a caramel note, depending on, you know, recipes that you're brewing, and bitters don't normally, or they're not supposed to. But what you also find is that if UK or British bitters are exported to faraway places like the USA, that caramel sometimes comes out. So there is a lot of people that think that caramel is part of the bitter style, whereas it is much more acceptable in a red ale. But anyway, I digress. The point is that pale ales, bitters, and red ales are all very much closely related.
Much of a muchness. We're almost, yes. For those listening, we're making little Venn diagrams that look almost like circles. So
almost like a circle.
But
they're very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll talk a little bit more about the history in a little bit, but I think just to tag on a little more to the red ale bit, you know, and we'll link in the show notes too, because Martin Cornell has a wonderful thing about, you know, how everything about Irish red ale is lies, which is facts that it's lies. But again, he points out that, you know, if you'd looked at, you know, before they launched some of the red ale stuff in the, you know, sort of the 70s and 80s, you know, Smithwick's and things like that were all basically the same as what you would get in sort of like a Fuller's London Pride, or like no big difference to like grain bill or what it ends up looking like. You had kind of a coppery beer in your glass. So, you know, it's an interesting, you know, do people just not want to say it? So
that's it.
There you go. Yeah. Is that the question answered? It's not really. It kind of is, but.
But this is the thing, like no one will ever agree, right? So it gives people something to argue about down the pub, which is, you know, all good. And it's a healthy thing to argue about, right? It's good to argue about beer and not about, you know, other things. So maybe it's a good thing to discuss.
Indeed. I mean, for me, they're not the same. Like, I don't think of them the same. I wouldn't judge them against the same criteria, because that's just not it. But they came from, you know, largely the same root beer of, like, you know, a pale ale. And your English parallels and your bitters, you know, they're just kind of similar. I think one of the defining factors of bitter, though, is that they were born out of and mostly served on cask. So,
yes,
you know, fair enough, a lot of beers back in the day would have been, but served on cask gave them a very different and distinct kind of profile compared to things that were happening out in Czechia or in, you know, other places. So that's another thing that we'll get to, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think you still see that today, where it's, you know, even if you're over in the UK, I feel like it's much more common to see a bitter, or at least an ESB maybe, on cask than maybe just a pale ale, which I'm air quoting here, even though, again, to your point, Andy, like the grain bills may be broadly similar. I think, you know, if you want to really make an argument about distinction, you can say, well, nowadays you can be a lot more precise in what malts you're putting in and how roasted or not those are. But still, especially when you're homebrewing, you're not quite sure how it's going to turn out. Like, obviously, at a production level, you are. But it's, you know, if we're talking about the 19th century, and we'll get into that a little bit more in a bit, like, there's a continuum there, and, you know, probably each brew is going to look a little bit different. Some will be darker, some will be lighter, you know, even at that industrial level, at that stage.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the other thing that you might look for in different kinds of beers of these natures is just looking at the almost English style hops. So they are different from American style pale ales, American style amber ales, you know, because they use different hop varieties and they bring different flavors. So that's one point of distinction. But between the sort of Irish red and the, you know, special bitter or best bitter, debatable.
No, absolutely. And I would say, from that hops perspective, I feel like, and again, this is a feeling, this is not a fact, but I feel like in Ireland, we tend to have more American style hops than you would get in the UK. We don't have as much of those kind of, you know, earthy or fuggles, or, you know, that kind of thing typically. Now, again, I'm sure there are exceptions to that, but I feel like whether it's a craft beer thing or just kind of the where we are now, I feel like we don't get that as much. So even in maybe the same, again, same styles, which again, I'm air quoting, but I don't know if that's just my perception or if either of you have noticed that you just kind of don't see the same ones. And I wonder if that's a supply issue or if it's just a taste issue. I don't know, like preference.
Well,
I think that in Ireland, people like bitter, we've mentioned it there. Both Tandy went to the shops, couldn't get one. Lisa only had two in her fridge, and there's a reason for that, and that they're bitter gone. Is not big in Ireland. And I suppose growing up, we would have watched on television, and it would all nearly always be somewhere like Emmerdale, you know, watching on the telly, and they'd walk into
the wool pack on Emmerdale.
There you go, and go, I'll have a pint of bitter there. Love. That wasn't even a northern accent, was it? I tried. It was terrible. Pint of bitter. And I remember going over when I first went over to the UK, and I said, I'll have a pint of bitter. And I think it was something like Tetley's or something. It was.
Finest. Yeah.
And I suppose it was a lot warmer than I was accustomed to, and a lot flatter than I was accustomed to. So you hear a lot of people saying it's warm and flat. So I know you guys are loving it, but I suppose maybe I haven't been exposed to good bitter.
Well, that's a really good question. And I think we'll chat a little more about some of those perceptions too. Because again, we're going to talk about Martin Cornell again, because, you know, friend of the pond. But I think just to stick on that warm and flat bit, I wonder how much of that is, was it a keg that was, or sorry, a cask near the end of its, you know, frankly, couple day life once it had been tapped? Was it sort of bad, you know, bad keeping? Or was it really like just not a great beer to begin with? Was it too warm? Like, you know, you wouldn't know necessarily unless you go somewhere where you really know, like, they know what they're doing. So
yeah, and I suppose it was my first time ever trying the style, and quite a few years back, so I had no comparison, you know. I had no
and you know
marker.
It's terrible when you try a new style and that first one doesn't hit right.
Because
you're just often put off the whole style. And I mean, a lot of people are put off, let's say, craft beer as a whole, if they just tried one double IPA and it was like way too much for them.
Exactly.
I'll never try, you know, an amber ale, or I'll never try a sour or whatever after that, which sucks. But it does happen. But with the warm and flat, I'm sure, Lisa, you're going to talk about it more. But, you know, traditionally, bitters would have been served on cask. And cask is a whole skill in and of itself. Managing a cask cellar, you know, you often have the person who just manages the casks. And it's, you know, the beers are almost, they're fermented, but sometimes not fully. They often finish their fermentation in the cask to sort of somewhat produce a little bit of that carbonation that you're going to get. And then they're hand pulled. You know, it's like almost I don't know how to describe it. It's like a gravity, but it's a, it's a hand pump.
Yeah, you're making it happen.
It brings the beer to you. And that's the way that it gets carbonated, but it's a bit of a loose term because they are less carbonated, definitely, from the cask. Bottled and canned versions will now be different. They'll be more carbonated, but from the pump, they're less carbed. And then the temperature is interesting because that cask temperature, I think it's, let me double check, let me not make things up, but it's not meant to be warm. It's just warmer than what we're accustomed to because big breweries sold us on the idea that all beer must be freezing, freezing, freezing cold. And within the setting of a warm pub, it should still be chilled, but it's not freezing cold like we're so used to now, I'd say.
So you're telling us that big beer decided to put little things on their labels to show that they're cold so that we couldn't taste all the shite.
Well, and here's a funny thing about that too. I've noticed this for the first time when I was in London most recently over the holidays. I saw Guinness labeled as being extra cold. And I was like, what's that then? What's that all about? So I've only seen that in the UK. I don't know, you know, Guinness friends, tell us if this is happening other places, but
it
was
used to be a thing
fascinated by
Ireland.
That. Yeah, extra cold. So, and this is, you know, on a lineup that had a Fuller's London Pride and, you know, some things that we would think of as very traditional sort of English beers, you know, a couple of different bitters, a couple of different pale ales, and then like your Carling Black Label and your, you know, that kind of thing. But I was like, you know, clearly these were all served at one temperature. This was not like where you go to Fidelity and they're literally dialing in the exact temperature. This was, so I was like, what is extra cold? What does this mean? I have so many questions. So.
Yeah. It's weird, you know, because I remember a colleague of a few years back telling me that he remembers a time in Ireland where Guinness was not cold, you know, or at least not as cold as what it is now.
Yeah.
And it is quite strange because, you know, as we all know, if you serve it really, really cold, any beer, doesn't matter what style, but you do, you're masking or at least not letting some of the flavors come out. Now, it's not to say you must drink your beer at 16 degrees or, you know, something very warm, but, you know, for your beers that have got interesting malts, especially, it's really beneficial to have them a little bit warmer, whether that's a stout or whether that's a Belgian style. You know, there's lots of different beer styles that just benefit from being slightly warmer. And it really confuses me to see Guinness, especially, pouring cold.
I thought that was so strange. But to go back to the point around kind of the art, if you like, of actually pulling the cask, when I was at the Mullingar Cask Festival here, which was so much fun, I think the sort of talk, which may have been true or at least close enough to being true that everyone kind of agreed, I think we had basically every beer engine in, you know, the Republic of Ireland there, like all seven or some very small number that were, you know, at least up and running or could be made to be up and running. And everyone was kind of learning as they went. Even people who'd done it before were kind of like, oh, got to get back into practice. But that was so interesting to me to sort of see everyone being like, we know that this is a thing other people know how to do and just trying to kind of get around to it. But again, I want to say there was only one beer that was, you know, actually labeled as a bitter. There were some pale ales and there were some really, really lovely things. But also Dead Setter had their Sham Maths, which is their amber on. So again, does it count potentially? And I think we'll circle back to this more too, because I know Martin again has written some stuff about how a lot of bitters are getting rebranded as amber or equivalent. But again, we can get into that in a bit. But I thought that was interesting that it is this kind of almost lost art here, and everyone had to kind of scramble to make it happen. So
now here's one for the brewers. Sorry, Katie. Here's one for the brewers, because I've never brewed for a cask before, but I've certainly had some bad beers from cask, right? Do you have to brew them differently? Because I know that within the cask, you're almost secondary fermenting them, or you're leaving some of the fermentation to be in the cask or in the barrel itself. It's almost like you would bottle condition your beers at home. If you're making like a Saison or something that's got a really interesting and needs different carbonation, or a Weiss, you're carbonating it in the bottle that you're going to serve it in. That's effectively what happens in the cask barrel, or the barrel itself, is that its secondary fermentation is there. But do you have to brew it in such a way that that is different? I don't know, because it is quite different if you keg.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thinking about like the brewers I know who do cask regularly, and I'm thinking about actually an American one, Machine House in Seattle. They do tons of things for cask, and they will do a lot of dry hopping or a couple of things like that, again, to get that sort of secondary kick, if you like. So they do a lot of that. But yeah, I'm not sure what else would change. And I will say, I used to go to a cask festival every year, again, in Seattle, also a great one in Philadelphia, but one in Seattle where there would at least be one section of the festival that was all about people, and I'm just gonna say it, people putting weird shit into the cask. And that was part of the experience. And every now and again, that would be really interesting and successful. And other times, not so much, where you're like, why did we do this? This was a lovely base beer that we've thrown all sorts into, which,
rose
again,
petals.
Oh, God, yeah, your cacao nibs, your rose petals, lots of tea, all these things that, on paper, that sounds great. And sometimes it did work. I do want to say sometimes... fantastic. But other times you're like, why? This would have been really nice. So, but I think it's a really good question. So yeah, so brewer friends, are you doing things differently, at least at that more, professional level for cask? And I don't have a good sense of that. So.
Yeah, I also don't. And maybe it's because I've never brewed one to be served on a cask. So I've no clue on that. But I have a feeling that once primary fermentation is done, you then transfer it to the cask to let it do its secondary fermentation.
Right.
But at that point, you might now need to add a little bit of extra yeast or a little bit of extra malt grains or sugars of some variety to get that fermentation active.
Yeah.
And I wonder, Katie, if some of the sort of perceptions of flat and warm comes from either not active enough yeast or bottom of the barrel or it's been sat there for too long. But the other thing about it is that it's normally unpasteurized. So, if you're getting a bitter that's in a can, it's more than likely been pasteurized in some other way, or at least pseudo pasteurized. And so they're very fickle in the cask, and that's why it takes such skill to manage the exact right time to serve, the exact right time to know that it's done. And it is, as Lisa said earlier, it's sometimes a couple of days. It's like 2 or 3 days, and then it's gone, because otherwise it can go a bit sour and it can taste a bit weird.
There you go.
Absolutely.
I was going to say that, all of the cask engines in Ireland were at the Cask Beer Festival, and it's like, if you compare us to our nearest neighbors, the difference is astounding. And do we have theories? I have theories. What are our theories for this? And
oh my goodness.
Are we going to blame big beer, local big beer?
Well, that is a theory, because, and I'll just tell you for those listening who have never been to Ireland or who don't live here, Ireland and the UK are not the same place, obviously, but a lot of people need reminding. Northern Ireland is obviously part of the UK, but the Republic of Ireland is not. It's part of the EU. But regardless of, when that all came about, I thought still, because England and Ireland are effectively neighboring countries, I thought that the culture and the beer culture specific and the pub culture would be quite similar. It's really not. It was fascinating to me to come here and see in what I thought would be a more of a UK model, where there's often pubs that have got their own beers, brewed in a tiny system downstairs, often cask pulled, as well as the big names, as well as your stock standard range. But You don't see that here. I think we've mentioned on the pod before, there aren't as many, or at least not many that have survived, like local breweries that are attached to pubs. I don't know of any offhand, which doesn't mean that they don't exist. And and then the style of beers, like everything is so different. In Ireland, you'll often see, now notwithstanding the sort of movement of craft beer of late, but you'll see your Heineken, you'll see Guinness. And now, you know, you'll probably see one or two other macro type beers, but Guinness is by far the biggest beer and it owns everything. Diageo owns everything.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's a funny thing too, because I would say I would have had the same impression before moving here. And even I would say maybe even just those couple of years of coming here before moving here, I felt like it felt more broadly similar. And maybe it was just the styles that were being brewed at the time by those craft brewers. I feel like there might have been more pale ales. There might have been more, actually, probably there were more amber ales, things like that. But then I feel like then all the haze boys took over. And so that's kind of, you know, we're all there now. But it's a funny thing, because I was writing up a little bit on kind of the nuances that are different in just the pub culture between, you know, the UK and here in Ireland. And even things about, like, do you order at the bar or not, I feel like are very different compared to over there. And it's, you know, they're only over there. But there's a lot of more sort of subtle differences. And I do feel that pubs here tend to be more inclusive. Everyone, like, you tend to see more kids, more, you know, more people of sort of multi-generational, you know, sort of people all over the place. I feel like pubs in the UK, and again, this is a generalization, tend to be more kind of these people go to this pub, these people go to this pub. And I don't know if it is for a particular reason or if it's part of it, but even just something like, do you order at the bar or not, is, you know, it's not a yes or no necessarily. So just some things like that. But then when you bring into the styles, and especially like around Cask, and again, I love Cask, and I have certain places I go whenever I'm in the UK, which luckily is relatively often for that kind of thing, so I can get my fix whenever I'm over. But it is interesting, and I do find I will really over index on everyone's bitter as opposed to everyone's like fun, cool, new, whatever craft thing. Cause I'm like, no, I want your old man beers. I want to go to the old man pub, and I'm just going to,
definitely. You know.
And it does feel though, like that's what you have to do to get it in some places, not everywhere, but I would say there is perception. And again, UK friends, let us know, are we on the right track here? I do feel like there is still that sort of camera, you know, sort of inspired thing of, you know, that's, yeah, that it's still kind of this, you know, kind of, again, kind of an old man thing to overgeneralize. That's who's drinking the bitters. And I will say, certainly when I lived in the north of England too, it would be those people who turn up when the pub opens, you know, to get their £1 pint, which, oh my God, you know, but they'd be getting their kind of flat bitter. So, you know, is it also sort of inspired by a truth? I'm not sure.
I don't know. But as you say, because it's not just pub culture and things, but it's the styles. So, you know, I was really surprised to come here to see the big macro beers were always lagers and then Guinness. So being a stout, right? That's cool. Not a whole lot in between. Whereas in the UK, okay, you'll get your lagers and you'll get your often Guinness and things there. But there's just normally a slightly bigger range of your standard beers. So a bitter, a pale ale, and, you know, maybe something else. Maybe, well, a golden ale is really just a light bitter. But, like, you know, you might just get those kinds of things, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, and I guess part of that comes out of that, like you were saying, that whole kind of tide, you know, tide pub culture, because like your Green King pubs are all going to have like your Green King bitter or IPA. But again, yes, I feel like they've been rebranding a lot of these things as just IPA, regardless of what they are. And we've talked about, you know, kind of IPA creep before. And we certainly have that here as well, too.
Oh, yes.
To That's a certain extent. One. But yeah, everything's an IPA. But
And bitters really are the, you know, if bitters came from parallels, IPAs really came from bitters. I mean, that's just,
it
know,
all works.
That's kind of the way it went.
And maybe that's actually a perfect sort of segue to dive into the history for a little bit, because like we're saying, you know, British 19th century, you know, you can put on whichever sort of empire hat you want to for that, because that's, you know, here we all are. But, you know, we're talking, you know, pale ales. But, you know, again, I'm relying here on the Oxford Companion to Beer, which I am well aware has certain inaccuracies here and there. And again, Martin, we're waiting for your next book. So just All will be corrected there, no pressure. But it's really interesting that, you know, it even says here, you know, that people don't even start calling it bitter until kind of mid to late, you know, 19th century. And then they're just using bitter to say, I don't mean that mild, because the mild is less hopped, you know, again, but in both cases, you're drinking it pretty soon after it's brewed. It's not sitting around. You're not aging this by any means. This is a beer you're drinking fresh. So bitter is really just to kind of disambiguate from mild, which still has hops, of course, but not as much. So but again, you know, when we look at how, you know, how hops have evolved, even, you know, just since, you know, when we can actually sort of track hop evolution from kind of, you know, the beginning of the 20th century, or probably not much before, like, we know that they've gotten so much sort of stronger, more distinct in style. So it's hard to know what those 19th century hops would have been like and how distinct those bitters would have been from those mild. So it's interesting that people felt they had to say, oh, I want that, not that. Like, how different was it is something I'm very curious about. Because again, when we look at recipes, we see the grain bill and we might see what hops they're using, but a lot of times it'll just be like, hops. You're like,
Can I wonder, you know, the way the 90s you had like the hops race?
Oh God.
Was bitter like the hops race of its time?
That is a really good question. I love that as a concept. Oh gosh, maybe there's a prestige, you know, dramedy to be made. Just saying.
I don't know.
That's a really good question.
So the IBU of a bitter would not be like an IPA, or is there overlap in like a?
It almost certainly wouldn't have been as strong, at least just from like an ABV perspective. So I think it would be hard to get both enough, like, you know, high enough ABV and to make it as bitter as, you know. And again, I'm thinking aloud here, so I'm like, probably not. But but it's interesting that, again, this point is, you know, they're not this one color. They could be very pale. They can be, you know, quite a deep, almost brown.
Rusty red.
You know, exactly. There is no one, like, I feel like, you know, now we often think of, like, I feel like people think of a Fuller's London Pride is what a bitter looks like, but that's only one. And there's a lot of variation. And certainly when, like, if you're just going to a place where they do a lot of really good cask and you order a bitter, it might be quite pale. It might be fairly dark. There's really a lot of variability. But I think, again, what's interesting is that, you know, we're looking in here, until recently, most beer consumed in the UK was cask-conditioned beer on draft served in pubs. But because the customers were calling the beer bitter, the term stuck, and then the brewers began to use it. So again, kind of driven by the consumer, there's a really interesting piece there. Mm. But you know, I think the other interesting thing is, you know, the bits that haven't changed, like, it really does feel like we're talking about, again, with a lot of these sort of historic ones, we're really talking about kind of these 19th century recipes that haven't changed very much in terms of, you know, what malts they're using, or at least maybe how roasted though or not those malts are. You know, obviously the specifics may change a little bit, but again, we're talking about, you know, Fuggles, Goldings, you know, these very specific varieties. But again, there's so much variation in, you know, even back then, like how bitter some of these would have been or not, or, you know, they can be kind of all over the place. But I think it is interesting that even, you know, when you're looking at kind of the historical angle, you know, if you're reading about, especially if you're reading old newspaper ads, which was a lot of what you're doing to kind of figure out what's going on here, like, is what they're calling a thing the thing? Are they doing the same thing? Are they calling everything a bitter when it's something else? Were they without their kind of IPA wash of the day? So...
Well, exactly. And I mean, you know, back in those times, you probably only had three or four choices of beer max. You know, you probably had a slightly maltier, lighter one, which was probably the mild. You know, you probably had the slightly hoppier one, and it's maybe slightly stronger, but not much stronger than the mild. That was your bitter. Maybe you got something slightly stronger, and then you might have had a stout, or you might have had something dark or aged. Maybe that was a distinction. But, you know, bitters were drank fresh. But their focus was on the bitterness, not again like IPAs now, where the aroma plays a big role and the hop flavor plays a big role. Bitters aren't always hop forward in their flavor, but the backbone is bitter, and it should be bitter. But again, by today's standards, where we've all been party to the IBU race, they don't always taste as bitter as what we'd imagine. But, you know, you must remember these are, you know, beers from another time, and I think they're beautiful and very complex.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's something that's really easy to understate, is some of these can be so complex and flavorful, and at such a relatively low ABV. Again, we're talking 3 to 5% for most. But some of these, there's a lot going on, and you're just like, ooh, you can just kind of sit there and sip. Now, again, this tells me I shouldn't be sipping. I should be drinking. It's very, but I'll have to read one bit out because I think we'll all appreciate this. Because although foreigners sometimes describe bitters as warm and flat, Katie, this is on you. This is on you.
Yeah.
They're actually best served at cellar temperature, you know, 11 to 14 C. No one wants warm, flat beer, least of all a veteran bitter enthusiast. And, you know, fair enough. But it's a funny thing, though. And this shows you how quickly these kind of books become out of date, not just in that particular language, which was a whole journey we went on together. But in, you know, he says today, many North American brewers brew a bitter. Hales Ale and Red Hook launched their versions in 1984. And those beers are hot garbage now. So it's, I wouldn't call them that. They have evolved, not necessarily in a good direction. So it's a really interesting thing that, you know, you did have this era of sort of, you know, kind of, I would say mid to late 80s up into the 90s, of like a lot of the American craft brewers were making, you know, they were making a bitter, they were making a stout, and they were making a pale ale, because that's what everyone did in the UK. And that's how it must have been the right thing to do. So it's an interesting thing then that so many of these have kind of disappeared as we've again had that hops arms race and all of these kind of things. But it's interesting that again these things are all, you know, sort of cyclical too, so at some point, you know, the wheel comes back around and we're waiting, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. So here's a random fact for you both and everyone at home. We often, and I think everybody falls trapped to this, but we often talk about the different kinds of bitters. There's an ordinary bitter, a best bitter, and technically it's a strong bitter. It's not a ESB, because ESB is trademarked by Fuller's.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's not a style. It's the way that Fuller's is described, you know.
And that's such an interesting point. Like, how much of that comes from a specific brewer or multinational conglomerate? So
there are really big brewers in the space. You know, it's not your mom and pop pub who are making bitters all the time. I mean, there are really, really big players in the scene.
Yeah. Well, and again, to go back to sort of this thing about perception, and again, we're going to link to a couple of these Martin Cornell articles, but he's pointed out that they're now calling Fuller's, you know, London Pride, now instead of the best bitter, it's original ale. And what does that mean? And he's got a bunch of other examples too, that a lot of things have been rebranded as an amber ale. And again, we can go back to the Sham Maths example. Is it really a bitter? Is that why I say we don't have enough amber ales? Is because really what I'm looking for is a bitter. Maybe, but it's such an interesting point. And again, I'm curious how much this is happening. You know, he named a couple of examples, but you know, what else do we have here that I think kind of fits into that category? We've talked about our red ales that I think, again, are, you know, very good fits, probably some of our pale ales as well. But it's, you know, we have all those things that you could probably just make a very slight shift and no one would notice.
I'm a little sad that the names are changing, because I think that even if, you know, even if largely they're the same thing as another style of beer, who cares, man? We're not governed by a BJCP style guideline.
No, absolutely.
I quite like the fact that the country has its own style.
Oh, definitely. Really. I wonder how much of it is maybe some of those big brewers, and again, now that Fuller's is owned by a giant Japanese conglomerate, are like panicking about all your Gen Z, Gen Z people just not drinking. Because I know if you put bitter in front of them, like, I don't want to drink a bitter thing. You're like, okay, but it's not bitter. And they're like, I don't care. Shut up. You're done. Like, you've missed, you know, they don't even give you that chance to interact.
It's original ale.
It's original ale. So, yeah. So is that part of it? Is it trying to appeal to maybe a younger demographic that sees the word bitter, even if they don't have that flat, you know, warm association, which I'm sure some of them might, but do they just see bitter and are like, I'm out, I don't want that. So I wonder if it's just the word. And again, I don't know, but
I don't know. It's hard to know, because I think that, and this is going to sound like the most boomer I've ever sounded like, right? But could we not just cater to the people that are actually buying the beer? Because I understand the need to bring new generations in, but like, it's if Gen Z are not drinking, okay, that's fine. But you've still got a whole bunch of people who are, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like this whole kind of rebranding, he's got a whole bunch of other examples of, you know, the bitters becoming amber ales. And I completely agree. You're losing kind of the heritage of the thing. And honestly, if I looked at those and saw those slightly different pump clips, I'm going to assume it's a different beer, you know?
Me too.
You know, and again, maybe that's my weird boomer thing, is I'm going to be like, well, I don't want that. I want the bitter. I don't want the, you know, this newfangled thing. But I don't know.
Although realistically, I don't envy all these brewers and all these big companies that are simply losing a whole generation to their beers. But, you know, when I read, it was one of Pete Brown's books, it was probably Man Walks Into a Pub, and he was talking about how lager became such a thing. You know, it was always kind of, you know, the ales, the bitters and the things. And lagers were almost seen, in his opinion there, seen as like the not your dad's beer.
So
in a way, if we're going to capture like a Gen Z, it needs to be not what your parents drink. And if your parents are all drinking craft beer, like, chances are you're going to go for something that's not beer, or something that is anti, you know, anti-craft. So are you going to go back to macros? Fair. You know, macros have sold well
ever
since.
They're popular for reason, and I do wonder now. Again, we've all not in any way lamented the demise of Island's Edge, because no, that was awful.
That was a
it's
fail.
Less bitter.
It's bitter. There we go. It's all on brand. But I think it's interesting, and I am glad that we're seeing Murphy's, where there was this Island's Edge, you know, beachhead, where we're like, no one wants this, like literally no one wants this. But I've also been seeing more Beamish as well. So is that part of that? Are, I don't know whether it's younger drinkers or just people who are like, you know, I want something that's not Guinness, but I want kind of the same thing, which, you know, and again, I know like we're hearing thousands of voices like, no, they're completely different. But, and that's okay. You can be partisans for your favorite stat. And again, I like a Beamish, I like a Guinness, I like a Murphy's, but it's nice to have more than one, even if they're all macros. Yes. But I wonder if that is, like you're saying, Tandy, that kind of response from the young people who maybe like, well, I don't want a Guinness because that's everywhere, but maybe I'll have a Beamish or a Murphy's because they're not quite as ubiquitous, but it's still like, you know.
But then if it was just about being a little bit different, then why not order a bitter?
Why? Like, well, because there aren't any. There are, they can't find
well,
any.
There aren't any here, no. There aren't any here. But, you know, go to the UK pub and now you'll see it as an amber, and then you won't know what to order because, well, you know, that sucks.
Well, actually, yeah, Katie, good to go back to your example of like going over and being like, oh, a Tetley's, that sounds exotic. And, you know, having that, like, what do you think that's like now for maybe someone who's, you know, sort of 18, 19 in Ireland, they go to the UK for the first time. What are they getting these days? Are they going to try a cask ale? They're like, no, I'm going to get this Haze Boy, you know. I don't know.
I have no idea. I just think that the youth aren't really into.
They're not drinking. No.
Drinking culture definitely in Ireland has flattened. Completely, they're all into fitness. Oh, what was that for?
And cocaine.
Okay, yeah, that's an issue here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably because they're into fitness, you know. It's not going to add calories to you. So, like, you know.
Oh, they can just go for a run. It's fine. But yeah.
And even things like the GAA are taken so much more seriously nowadays than they were like 20 years ago. I think everybody went a bit mad over some club in Galway had their guidelines for their players. It's like, you will not be drinking. You have to show up for training. If you're up in Dublin, you're expected to be here at least twice a week and things
well,
like
then
that.
Pay so me to play.
Right. And no, they don't pay. It's all
exactly. That's
all
what I'm saying.
Amateur.
It's not a professional sport. So why on earth would anybody listen to those rules?
But
I mean, besides your
impact.
Personal ambitions.
Yeah, that has had a massive impact, I think, on alcohol in young people. And also, it's very expensive.
It's fair. Expensive. Absolutely. Absolutely. It is very expensive. Yeah.
I can understand how people, if they've got a certain budget, alcohol doesn't fit into it, but certain other things might, because I get it. Like, it's everything is, I mean, cost of living is crazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone is struggling. Everyone is suffering. You know, there's no increases in salary, but holy crap, are there increases in everything else? So it's just, yeah. And alcohol really it's a nice to have, isn't it? It's a treat.
That'd be interesting if homebrewing comes back to being more affordable again, like, because it's still so expensive. Well, not so expensive. We've talked before, you can start for cheap, but will it become, you know, cheaper than a night out again? I don't know. I don't know. It's an interesting question.
It's a black hole where you can just like pour your like hook your salary straight up to a black hole called homebrewing. If you want.
Oh, you could. You could. Yes.
You could. And it's like, I think that still homebrewing, like, as much as people might want cheaper beer, to get cheaper beer that's actually really good, you do have to sink some money and time and experience.
You
have to learn about stuff. It's not...
Yeah, and it's a funny thing, because I feel like when we first started homebrewing now a very long time ago, some of it was to get, you know, styles that were harder to find. I'm like, do we have to start doing that again? Now, again, I will say, like, there was one, like, phenomenally good bitter at Hagstravaganza last year, but the brewery that made it is having to close up shop and is getting bought by another one, so that's out in California. But it looks like it's a good... You know, it's a good acquisition. It's all people who know each other. So hopefully that will all work out well for everyone. It was from Bagby, and it was just gorgeous, gorgeous bitter. But Green Cheek will be picking them up. Yes, it was so good. It actually was called, it had a very funny name. Bagby was the brewery, and it was King of the Britons. So it was all kind of a spam, Monty Python spam. But
That's awesome.
Lovely. It was so good. So I hope that beer continues to be made when Green Cheek takes them over. But again, isn't that odd that you go to Ireland for a beer festival? One of the best beers is an English bitter from a California brewery. So it's all
globalization.
But that's the thing. Like, sometimes you've got to travel to find a nice bitter, at least one that's called a bitter. Arguably, as we've been saying here. Maybe they're around. Now, you're not going to get them on cask very often here, certainly. But, you know, again, we can go bug Patty at Underdog and say, where are those beer engines? We're waiting.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's kind of like making bread. You know, bread is largely cheap. It's largely predictable. And you know what you're getting in all of that. When you start making bread at home, and I'm not talking about sourdoughs, I'm talking about just, you know, normal old, like, yeasted bread, you'll soon realize how difficult it is to make a bread like you get, like a sliced pan. You realize just how difficult that is, because it's your bread will always be denser, chewier, not quite as malleable and light, and it will be delicious, but it's not the same bread. And I think it's kind of the same with brewing. Like, people who think that they're going to get into it so that they can have cheaper version of a Heineken, good luck.
Right.
Tell me your secret if you crack it, because
it's
not going
to
happen.
Say, the Irish sliced pan is a beauty. Oh my god.
It's a special thing.
I miss it when you're living abroad. Tandy's like, no, I don't. You're not a fan.
No.
Oh my god. Reddit.
I know. And you know, I saw this thread on Reddit the other day, and it was literally this. It was this debate on, like, what is the best, like, sliced bread or whatever that you can get in Ireland. And there was one person lonely in the comments and said, please don't deport me, but it's Hovis, because they're from the UK. And
I
agree.
That's funny.
I know
funny.
It's terrible, but like, I really want to like the Brendan sliced pan, but it's like, Doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I feel like if I'm gonna push the boat out, I do really like it, but if I'm gonna push the boat out and have all the carbs and all the butter and things, because I will go through like phases of being like, now we eat toast or you know, equivalent. But I love like really good farls. Like that's another nice thing that you only get in Ireland, and that's nice too. So anyway, there you go. Another option. But I always know like when I get to the stage where I'm eating a lot of toast, this is when I then need to go back and start being like, no, we don't do this, except maybe of a Saturday. No, it's when everything has gotten completely off track. I can't do it.
I
you've got a
toast.
You've got a level of discipline that I aspire to, Lisa.
But
I can't resist toast. I do love Marmite. Some good toast. Are you kidding me? It's my favorite.
Oh, well, now Marmite, that's a whole discussion. But I did once have a cask bitter with Marmite added. I was not a fan. I'm sure someone would be. I mean, on one hand, it's all yeast, right? It's all yeast extracts. Yes. So.
And it comes from beer yeast. It's not.
It does.
It's like the extracts of beer yeast going back into beer. But it doesn't work. It's just not right.
No, it didn't work. It was just. And not even salty. It was just, just the umami. It was just almost like
too umami.
It tasted green, if that makes sense. It was not. Yeah, it was not for me. It was not for me. Mm-mm. So,
no.
And
it's
that note, talking about green, I'm going to show you my green T-shirt again.
Yes. Oh,
do you like what I did there?
Oh, I love that. I love that. Very friends, good. Katie and I are going to Eurovision, and we can't wait.
And it's in t-shirt. Only 3 months' time, guys. Come on, only three months. Where's your countdown?
Well, we have to do another countdown first. And that countdown is to the 26th of January.
Yeah, so maybe by the time you're listening, maybe this has already happened or we'll be close. We'll find out. But
Good Pubbin, which says on my t-shirt, which is a statement that means suddenly.
Suddenly.
Or what would have been said in West Clare is, of a sudden.
Of a sudden, oh, okay.
Oh, of a sudden, someone appeared. And that is a song by Ailsa, which is one that I really, really like. And I'm also a big fan of a song by Bambi Thug.
I enjoyed that as well.
Doomsday Blues. I really like those two.
Yes.
So I'm hoping I will be voting. And if this episode does go out before the Euro song, let's see. Let's vote. Everybody tune in Friday night, 26th.
We're excited.
9:30 on RTE1. Guess what show it's on? It's on the Late Late Show. We've already covered the toy show here before for people who are not from Ireland who are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, as far as my television's concerned, that's the only thing that RTE airs because that's the only time we've got it on. So, you know. There you go. It's for Eurosong, Eurovision, and the toy show. That's it. So there you go.
Same here.
And Tandy is like, I am not committing until they've all been decided, and then I'll start listening to the entries.
I know. It's really terrible, but like, I really only get excited for Eurovision when everyone is finalized, and then I've got a little bit of space before the actual show, and then I obsess for like a month. So then I'm obsessed and then I know everything about everybody and then I'm very happy. But before then, I'm like, this is not this month's problem. That's
fair.
That's like,
fair.
You know, it's an April, May thing.
Well, I'm a little bit in that obsession stage right now.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm very excited I'm too. Happy. And I'm even like, I almost feel like even I have a villain almost because of this poor boy band. Like, it's not their fault, but I'm like, I don't need this. No.
I know. But it's like, what are they? They're living in the early 2000s.
It's not for me.
2024. Get with the time. Louis Walsh, what are you doing?
Yeah. I'm sure they're all lovely boys, but I'm like, no.
Okay. Well, now let's just quickly circle back down to the bitters. Are there any more thoughts we'd like to share on these bitters?
I think
more, please.
More, please. And more. Cask, just saying, I know they're out there. I've seen these beer engines in action. They were all in working order. So just wherever they've gone.
Okay. I'm gonna counter your point.
Education.
I'm gonna counter your demands there, Lisa. Like, I love cask and I think more would be great, but bad cask is
Oh no, it's gotta be done
worse
well.
Than no cask.
I agree.
I feel like it's one of these things where you could almost have a pub that has cask, like Underdog has, you know, been saying, yeah, that's cool, because then the management is in-house, right?
But and they know what they're doing. Yep.
Yeah. The idea of everybody just sending their beers and thinking it's going to pull well on cask, I'm not here for that.
No. It's got to be the right thing. But I would love to see someone making something for a dedicated, regular cask, whatever, night, whatever, you know, like it used to be in the old days at the Underdog, where there would be every Friday, new cask. I'm just, you know, now that we don't get them all from the UK because Brexit, it would be nice to see someone here making something. That's all.
You get them from Northern Ireland, though, with no fees. Like, it's like the little golden opportunity.
But let's anyway, open up that can of
worms. Let's not talk politics.
So for the listeners, that topic itself will come up very soon.
Yes.
Not necessarily for cask, but it's coming. We're going to talk about it. Yes, it's all there. But yeah, definitely more bitters, right? They can be in cans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bottles,
but
all good. Yes. And oh, I loved your preview there. They could be in cans. Maybe they'll have to be in bottles. What are we talking about? Tune in next time to find out. So
indeed. Hey. Indeed. Or one of the next times.
Yes. One of the next times.
It's happening. It's happening soon. Note,
we're very organized. You can see that.
Yes.
Totally, we are.
Yeah.
Yes. Welcome back to Beer Ladies 2024. we're still in season 4, just in case it's confusing. But yes, we're very organized this season. But hell, it's lovely to be back. Oh, and by the way, we haven't quite yet decided whether we're back weekly or bi-weekly. It might be a little bit of a mixed bag for now, but we'll see.
We'll figure it out.
We will see.
So there we go.
I think we'd all love to be putting out the content weekly, but life gets in the way. Oh, you know?
Big time.
Absolutely. But we will say we've got a lot to discuss this season. We've got some very cool things lined up. And obviously one of us who's not here tonight because she's busy editing a book has a book coming out. So you will be hearing plenty about the book.
Yes.
So stay tuned.
Indeed. Well, then, you know what? I'm going to call it before we get too distracted with everything else.
Although it's
always fun to chat. okay, friends, thank you very much for tuning in to the Beer Ladies podcast. And Lisa, Katie, thank you so much for bringing your knowledge and your questions and your perspectives. It's awesome. Yes, and to the brewers everywhere, please make more bitters. We do love them. They're delicious. Yes. Oh, and by the way, Lisa is running what seems to be an amazing, you know, awareness campaign of Beer Ladies on Threads. Have you guys downloaded Threads yet? There we are. So Threads is soon fast becoming the primary socially media place, along with Instagram, I'd say, Lisa.
Yeah. We're trying not to go over to the what's happened to poor Twitter.
It's dreadful over there.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in the daily musings and sharings of links and things, then head over to Threads. And if you don't follow us on Instagram already, do that. Otherwise, you know the deal. Website has always got everything for you.
Here.
All right. See you next time. Bye, friends.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.